I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, is the media intentionally covering for dangerous illegal aliens, or are they just lazy? We'll discuss. Plus, the FBI disrupts a left-wing terror plot, and the new King County executive is eliminating some controversial departments like the Equity Department and Race and Social Justice. Is this promising, or are they just going to be repackaged? We'll discuss that as well. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A little housekeeping. We'll remind you every day this week. We are off after this week for the last two-ish weeks of the year. We will still have some special reports coming out, and we never miss an episode of Sundays with Subscribers. We've got some great guests lined up, but we won't have our daily live show like this one. So enjoy it before the break. All right. I struggle with this question, and it's not rhetorical. I genuinely am not sure if the media is trying to cover for dangerous illegal aliens or if the media is just lazy. And I do believe it's probably a combination of the two of those things. I think there's some media outlets that are intentionally deciding that suspects in violent crime who are in the country illegally should be protected because they don't want to make something political out of it or give Donald Trump any sort of wins. And then I believe there are newsrooms who employ young people, don't pay them very much. They have no idea what they're doing and are just really generally terrible at their jobs. So it's probably a combination of the two things, but it's not an excuse. Neither of those things is an excuse to intentionally or unintentionally mislead or hide critical information from your readers or viewers. So there is a story playing out right now, and this is horrible, by the way. We didn't cover it yesterday. We probably should have. And so we'll make sure that we give it the attention it deserves today. There was an attack on two Bellevue police officers that happened over the weekend. Thankfully, they're alive. Officers Sean Weinbrenner and Guillermo Spagnola, who were attacked by a knife-wielding homeless man. Our friend Jonathan Cho got to the scene shortly after it happened.
Shot fire! Call one's closed. Fire, shot fire.
Radio copy, shot fired at 12:34.
What you're hearing
Where
is the
radio.
Police radio
I
traffic.
One Adam at the Bellevue Downtown Transit Center.
1 and 12. I'm hit. I'm bleeding from the head. Starting EMS now.
Copy, starting EMS. 1 Adam 12 hit.
13 has passed.
10 and 5, 0:45, putting on a priority call.
Okay.
0:44, back and pending an assessment.
0:40, an officer has a head laceration, neck laceration, and a stab wound in the back.
300, 400 block of 110. Can you tell them to come to the transit center, please?
Yeah, horrifying. So what happened is police got a 911 call reporting a potential domestic disturbance. So they responded to the transit center to find the individual who was reporting it or potential victims. And they were met by a man who I'll discuss his background momentarily. And as they're sitting there having a conversation with them, he pulls out a large knife and he begins to attack the officers, slashing one of them across the face, in the back, as you heard there on the police traffic. Officers were able to fire 6 rounds. 3 of them hit the suspect. The suspect is also still alive, which I prefer because then you can face justice for your what you've done. Now, there are some details in charging documents in the police report that have been left out of nearly every single news report in the city of Seattle and Washington State, except so-called conservative media. But they're details that are significant. Now, I will acknowledge, I think we're still missing some key facts about this. But I'm not going to withhold these details from you that could be very relevant to this case just because we're still tracking down information. So the individual charged in this case is a guy named Mohammed More Bangura. He has been charged by the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office with first degree and second degree assault for this unprovoked attack on these two officers. Again, one of those officers, Weinbrenner, slashed across the face with a kitchen knife, stabbed twice in the back, has a broken collarbone and a dislocated shoulder from the resulting scuffle before the suspect, Mohammed Moray Bangura, was ultimately shot and then taken into custody. So this is, by any stretch, a very serious case and very serious charges. Now, in the charging documents released by the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, I think what makes this even more significant is this individual, they believe, lured officers there. That the individual who attacked those officers is the one who placed the call to 911 because he wanted officers to respond to his location so he could kill them. So this was not just unprovoked, as it was characterized. This was an attempt to bait officers into a response so he could take their lives. That's the kind of dangerous individual we're dealing with here. So a couple details besides, you know, I'll spare you some of the graphic nature of what happened in that moment. I think it was illustrated pretty well in the police calls. So according to charging documents, again, sent out, just so you know how this happened, the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, as I've stated many times, has a guy named Casey McNerthney working there. He's a former crime reporter for the PI. Casey and I worked together when we were just young reporters. He's the best public information individual in government in the state of Washington, not even close. He is incredibly proactive. He provides the media with information before we even ask for it. He sends proactive emails with any frequently asked questions that we might have. So in a case that's charged by King County, there is literally no excuse, none, for the media to claim they didn't have information at their disposal, they didn't know the details of a case, because proactively the King County Prosecutor's Office sends it out. Here are some details that stand out to anyone who cares to read the charging documents. So the description of what happened here, it says, the suspect unzips the right pocket of his jacket, retrieves a knife, immediately lunges at Officer Spagnola. Bangura is seen bringing the knife over his shoulder, holding it like an ice pick and making a downward stabbing motion toward Officer Spagnolo. Over his shoulder, Officer Spagnola was able to avoid being struck with the knife by jumping to his right. Bangura then immediately turns to his left toward Officer Weinbrenner and attacks him in a similar fashion. Bangura first slashed the right side of Officer Weinbrenner's face, and then he continued his attack from there. So that happens. Officers respond. They note this detail. So initially, they're trying to identify this guy. They're having a hard time identifying him. And then a police detective that responds locates Bangura's Sierra Leone passport with his full name and photograph, which matches the person in the officer's video and the DOL photograph. So they're able to positively identify him, their suspect finally, I mean, he's at the hospital at this point, with a name based on his Sierra Leone passport. Now, I mentioned there's some information and context missing. We do not know if this suspect is illegally in the United States. We know his name, Mohammed Moray Bangura. We know, according to the document that was sent to every single newsroom in the Seattle area, that he has a passport from Sierra Leone. For some reason, that detail and one other key detail didn't make it into a single mainstream news report in the entire city. Not King 5 News. Not Como News. My Northwest. Cairo 7. The Seattle Times. No, it was just a man. It was just a man. I tend to think it's a very relevant piece of information, even if he's here on some sort of temporary status. I tend to think it's a very relevant piece of information that he has a passport from Sierra Leone. The other detail that, yes, I guess, I suppose it would take a reporter with some knowledge of crime and justice and news in Seattle to identify this very, very important detail. But I saw the police report and I immediately saw the address, his last known address. I bet you some of you even know what this is. 77 South Washington Street, Seattle, is this individual's last known address. Mohammed Moray Bangura, 77 South Washington Street. I guarantee you're screaming at your screens because even you, and apparently some Seattle reporters either don't know or don't care to point out what that means, that's a homeless day center. So now we have an individual who has lured Bellevue police to his location, tried to murder them with a large kitchen knife. He has a Sierra Leone passport, and his last known address is a homeless shelter in Seattle. 77 South Washington. And we have every major news outlet that has decided that neither of those two details are relevant. The fact that he's homeless and the fact that he has a passport from Sierra Leone. Nope, not a mention of it. The only two mentions of this I saw are from our friend Jonathan Cho and our friend Ari Hoffman. Now, the question I pose to you is that intentional or is it laziness? Or is it just shitty reporting? I am sure it's a case-by-case basis. But for outlets like the Seattle Times, as an example, that didn't mention either of those two facts, if you read the Seattle Times story, they tell this tale, and it's told in the charging documents as well, that apparently this guy from Sierra Leone, who's homeless, has a pending case against him. He had some sort of scuffle with a security guard, and he was accusing officers of lying to put a case on him. So apparently he had some sort of weird, misguided vendetta against the police. But we know these other details of the story. He's homeless. He's got a passport from Sierra Leone. He's clearly unhinged. If you read the Seattle Times story, it basically reads like a regular man who police wronged went and stabbed them. Like, they make it almost sound like a way to justify it. Like police, he felt like police, you know, lied and put a case on him. And so he turned around and stabbed them. And to me, knowing the homeless population can be, and a lot of them are drug addicted or mentally ill, I believe that pointing out that he's transient and homeless is a crucial detail. And I believe that he at least is from Sierra Leone or is an immigrant or whatever it is, any detail. You don't have to characterize him as illegal because we don't know if he's actually illegal yet. We have reached out to the Department of Homeland Security to try to ascertain that, which we should. I am going to go out on a limb because I do an opinion show and say there's a high likelihood he's in the country illegally. But even if he's here as a lawful immigrant, that shows we've got a guy from Sierra Leone, whatever the circumstances are, if he's illegal, refugee, whatever it is, and he's homeless living on the streets of Seattle and he's stabbing cops in Bellevue. Probably not someone who we want here, right? Whether we brought him here on a refugee status or whatever it is, well, at this point, he's just a dangerous leech on society. And given the larger context around the conversation about both legal and illegal immigration, I think pointing out that he's from Sierra Leone is incredibly important information to give the public. Yet nearly every single media outlet declines to do so. And they can't use ignorance as an option because we already know that every single one of them was sent the same documents that we got that said the same things. They should know on site he's homeless, says where his last known address was, homeless shelter, and they identified him using his Sierra Leone passport. And one of the reasons why I tend toward the media is doing this intentionally is they do it all the time. They hide the immigration status of people all the time. Remember, we always call out the headlines, Washington man, like the Washington man who murdered State Patrol Trooper Christopher Gadd. No, he wasn't a Washington man. He was an illegal alien from Mexico who had multiple run-ins with law enforcement and should have been deported a long time ago before he was able to murder a Washington State Patrol trooper. But it doesn't matter the conduct they engage in. The media will hide the fact or ignore the fact or not even bother to look into the fact because they're scared of the answer about whether someone is in the country illegally. The same thing happened, although there were some outlets that were willing to report that this person was illegal, with the illegal alien truck driver who about a week and a half ago murdered a Washington state father by plowing a big rig into the back of the vehicle driven by that father, Robert Pearson. And not only was this individual in the country illegally, he'd come into the country through the southern border in 2023 under Biden, and it was a catch and release where they caught him coming across the border, but Biden decided to release him into the interior of the country anyway. And then he went on to somehow find himself employed driving a big rig illegally in the country, not eligible for a CDL. And not only did he murder a young father right before Christmas, but because of our state sanctuary policies, and because the media refuses to point out the dangerous aspects of those policies, this guy, illegal alien from India, was granted bail within 24 hours after murdering a Washington father, was able to be bailed out of jail. They didn't honor the ICE detainer because we're in a sanctuary jurisdiction. And so I guarantee he's halfway back to India by now. You think he's going to stick around to suffer the consequences of what he's done? I don't think so. And the media plays a role in that. The media plays a part in that. Because the media is refusing to give the public a clear picture of how profound of a problem this is, because they report on these stories involving violent crime or whatever it is, and they don't tell the public that it's an illegal alien or an immigrant from Sierra Leone. So as far as the public is concerned, oh, it's just a Washingtonian committing crime against another Washingtonian. And so the public is sort of blind to the reality of the dangers of illegal immigration and the dangers of our sanctuary policies. And then when there's a story as obvious as the one with this illegal alien truck driver, where so many facets of our system failed because of Democrats, the border crisis under Biden, releasing someone into the interior of the country so they can go off the radar, eventually kill someone and still get released on bail and then disappear again. Even when something like that happens, the media refuses to point it out. So many members of the public are just left believing that, gosh, our sanctuary policies feel so nice. And ICE is evil. Trump is the bad one. ICE agents are the bad ones. These are just immigrants trying to build a better life, and they just don't differentiate. So I go back to this all the time. I could blame politicians and all of that, but the real culprit is the media. The real culprit is the media, because if the media were doing its job to hold powerful people accountable, they would be knocking down the door at the governor's office to try to demand answers as to why our sanctuary policies continue. You'll recall, gosh, I think it was earlier this year, I went down to a press conference that Governor Bob Ferguson was having, and they allowed me to attend and let me in, so, great. And it was about fighting the Trump administration. And fighting the Trump administration's crackdown on illegal immigration and crackdown on sanctuary jurisdictions. And I finally got an opportunity to point some of these things and to ask Governor Ferguson about the dangers of sanctuary policies. But I think because he's been so emboldened and never gets asked these questions, he very easily brushed me off.
So you've used this phrase repeatedly that we're not going to sacrifice our state's values. We have several instances in this state. I see the chief of the patrol behind you. He just sat front row at sentencing while a man was sent to prison, an illegal alien, who murdered a Washington State Patrol trooper because of our state's sanctuary policies. How is that in line with our state's values?
Our job is to make sure we're adopting laws that make the appropriate balance and to keep Washington working at. Adopted in a bipartisan fashion, by the way, by the state legislature, I think strikes that right balance. If folks violate the law, engage in criminal conduct, they're going to be held accountable for that here in Washington State, and whether you're documented or undocumented. So I think those are consistent with the values of the Keep Washington Working Act, and we'll continue doing that.
But the point in the question was, he had had several run-ins with law enforcement in the years that he was living here illegally, where in a non-sanctuary state, they could have cooperated with ICE to remove him from the country. There's no doubt that Christopher Gadd would be alive today if it weren't for our state sanctuary policies. Why not cooperate with the federal government and with ICE when it comes to known violent criminals who we could remove from our streets in the interest of public safety?
Yeah, appreciate that. I think I've answered that question. Any other questions that folks have?
No, you didn't. And if there were real journalists, is my mic on? Sorry. Okay. No, you didn't. If there were real journalists in the room, they would have followed up on that. And they would have said, hey, well, you're not really answering her question. But they're too scared and they don't care. They support the sanctuary policies. There's so many obvious lines of questioning for the governor and for other elected leaders who support sanctuary policies, and the media just doesn't do it. So, of course, if the media is not asking the questions, if the negative headlines aren't in the news, if these facts aren't being pointed out to people, well, everybody will act like, oh, everything's working just fine. And we know it's not. People are dying. And again, I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, man, I'll apologize on the show. But crazy homicidal guy with a Sierra Leone passport on his person, I'm going to bet that's an illegal alien. Because if you immigrate to this country legally, I don't think you're going to continue to carry around your Sierra Leone passport if you've been given citizenship to the United States. That really doesn't make a ton of sense. And if you were just brought here on some work visa or student visa or something, I don't think you'd be sleeping at 77 South Washington Street. So there's a lot of things here that aren't being done. The media is to blame. And if you are still passively supporting any of those media outlets, or frankly, and I hate to use this as an opportunity to tell you to support our show, like that is the number one issue that we're facing in Washington State and blue states is the captured media. So if you're clicking on stories from these news agencies, you're contributing to their ability to operate. If you're sharing stories on social media, commenting on stories on social media from these news agencies, you're helping with their ability to continue to operate. If you're passively still subscribing to the Times or getting a Sunday paper from the Seattle Times, you are actively contributing to the demise of our state. And the only way that they are going to realize that they have to change their ways and do their job to hold powerful people accountable is if their business model fails and they might lose their jobs. Because there's nothing else that's going to convince them to do the right thing because they are so deeply, deeply biased. So it's absolutely up to every single one of us to say we are shutting out and shunning any news agency that won't report the truth and that won't ask the party in power or any person in power hard questions. That is quite literally your job. And the number of press conferences that we see where there's one reporter or where there's 12 reporters and half of them can't even muster a question for a person in a position of power, that happens all the time. So in many cases, they can do their jobs. They're deciding not to do their jobs. They have the information. They're deciding not to report it. And I hate to go back to the media is the enemy of the American people because I used to absolutely hate that phrase with the heat of a thousand suns. But at this point, I just don't know how else you could characterize it. All right. In our segment, Unbelievable, is King County making moves towards common sense? I'm not so sure, but maybe there's some positive signs. First, if you are concerned about the strength of your retirement portfolio and its ability to stand up to risk, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham of Bulwark Capital, and he'll give you a free risk assessment. Just say, hey, Brandy told me to get in touch with you, and you could take a second look at my retirement portfolio. He would be happy to do it. Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital specialize in risk management. A lot of, he says, the questions they're getting right now are really related to AI. People are hearing all this talk of an AI bubble. They're concerned about that, the overvaluation of stocks. But really, he can talk to you about whatever you're concerned about. He'll also discuss how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible, which is what every single one of us want. So schedule your free risk review now and subscribe to Zach's Daily Market Recap, both at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, as you know, King County has a new executive, Girmay Zahalai. He is pretty far to the left, although I don't think he is from a personality standpoint. I don't think he's as bad as the former King County executive, Dow Constantine. But the truth is that Girmay Zahalai supported things like divesting money from police departments. So I'm very, very worried about what he'll do as King County executive. However, he's eliminating some agencies in the county, and I think you'll also be shocked by which ones. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Whoop. Okay, so important to point out, again, very far to the left ideologically, but Girmay Zahalai is also a black man. And so I would think that for maybe both of those reasons, he would be holding fast onto the race-based equity, everything he can. But according to the Seattle Times, that's not the case. King County leaders streamlining his office, folding in climate equity employees, okay? So it says, King County Executive Girmay Zahalai is eliminating the four offices that fall within the executive office in an effort to break down silos and enable better collaboration in county government. Zahalai, who took office last month as the first new elected executive in 16 years, will eliminate the executive climate office, the office of equity and race and social justice, the office of economic opportunity and creative economy, and the Office of Performance, Strategy, and Budget. He says, our commitment to climate inequity and social justice are not going away, but we're not going to have the silos that you saw in the last administration where you had an office of this, an office of that. We're going to have one executive office that all works together to advance our priorities. So I think TBD, but it's a damn good start to say we're not having a separate office of equity We're not having a separate office of race and social justice. We're not having a separate office for a creative economy, whatever the hell that is, and to have it all fall within the purview of the King County Executive's office. Office of Climate Justice, whatever it is. Now, he's saying we're still going to be committed to those things. But I think just by virtue of them not having a standalone office where you've got employees dedicated to those causes, whenever you have a situation like that, they just make up shit to do. They're just like, we have a $14 million a year office of equity at the state level that they should cut because all the different agencies say that they're focused on equity efforts. But then you get an office of equity, $14 million budget a year, bunch of employees, they're just going to make up shit to do. They're going to make up areas of government where we must institute equity-driven policies. So do I think that Girmay Zahalai, a leftist black man, is not interested in the ideas around race and social justice and equity? No, I think he very much is. But when it's all housed within his office, he, as the county executive, is going to have a lot of different things to do. And you're just not, in my opinion, going to be able to have the day-in, day-out obsession with trying to find a justification for having an Office of Equity, an Office of Race and Social Justice, an Office of Climate. So I actually think this is a very, very good thing. The article goes on to say, just as Zahalai was announcing the elimination of several offices, his 100-member transition committee at its last meeting recommended the creation of two new offices. Now, whether he's going to agree with that? Draft recommendations included the creation of an Office of Labor Standards devoted to labor rights and wage violations, and an Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs to focus on immigrant protections and resources. There are about 147 appointed positions in the executive office. The people in about 70 of those positions have not been asked to stay on and will likely be out of their current jobs in January. Zahalai said they are trying to find spots for those people within other county departments. Now, I think the key as to whether he really means it when he says he wants to streamline will be whether he creates those two new offices. Like, you're saying we need to cut these offices so we're not operating in a silo, but at the same time, they're like, oh, let's create an Office of Labor Standards and let's create an office to protect immigrants. If he means what he says, he should say no to those recommendations, obviously. And even though he's a leftist in there, I don't believe that because you're eliminating layers of bureaucracy, right? So it's obviously going to save money through fewer positions. But you're eliminating bureaucrats who are sitting in an office all day, tasked with a certain thing, equity, climate, whatever it is, and having to justify their job so they can keep it. And that's kind of like what we see in the homeless industrial complex. You have all these areas and jobs that exist specifically because of homelessness. So they got to find ways to justify keeping their jobs so they don't lose it. So they're just, you know, coming up with weird stuff to spend money on that doesn't work. And then they want to keep the homeless crisis going. And so to me, this is actually really good news. I think we're still going to see equity and race and social justice and climate nonsense coming out of King County. But I don't believe we'll see as much money wasted on it. Now, if I end up being wrong, fine. You can tell me that I'm wrong. But eliminating layers of bureaucracy is always, always a good thing. All right. I want to talk about what's happening down in Tacoma. We should have been talking about this weeks ago, but a lot has been going on. So the city of Tacoma is actually making some steps toward maybe better policy around landlord-tenant laws. We'll discuss that coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have an innovative marketing strategy to make sure that you are getting the most possible value out of your home, which is what everyone wants. You're getting the most feet in the door, and so it's important that your listing stands out. And one of the services they offer that's really popular with people is their Listing Boost Concierge service. And that's when they come in, give you recommendations on suggested improvements, and can even help you manage those projects. That's what they did for Elizabeth W., who was looking to sell her condo. She says, I love how they offered the exact support that I needed without any pressure. They were quick to respond to any questions or hiccups. She said, I appreciate all the support for a quick and easy sale, 5 stars. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. Is the city of Tacoma backing away from asinine tenant protections that were passed 2 years ago because what we all warned would happen with those protections is starting to happen? Well, it seems like the answer to that is yes. So maybe are we doing a positive couple stories on the show today? Oh my God, are they moving in a positive direction? As you know, and this will ramp up in the coming year, we do weekly housing segments during the session with the Rental Housing Association of Washington. And really that partnership is designed to keep some of these stories in the spotlight because we're told by Democrats we're in the middle of a housing crisis, and yet they never want to actually talk about and discuss the fact that a lot of that is self-inflicted through really bad laws that make it difficult to rent out units, so people are selling those properties so they're owner-occupied, and through asinine policies like rent control. So we're going to continue those weekly segments as the session begins, but I wanted to point this out before we get into the session this year and talk housing policy, because there are some jurisdictions like the city of Tacoma that are very quickly starting to realize the tenant protections that sound nice, like, oh, don't evict people during the winter months, don't evict people during the school year, cap late fees to $10, that might sound really nice, but actually it has the opposite of the intended impact, because it creates really a more, if it creates a more hostile environment for housing providers, that is going to lead to fewer available units for tenants. And that's going to mean that some people have to find other places to live, or it's going to mean that rents are going sky high because of supply and demand. So this is from My Northwest. Tacoma Council passes an amendment to rental housing laws despite protests. So 2 years ago, Tacoma citizens voted through all these new tenant protections, some of them the ones I outlined, you know, don't evict people in the winter months, don't evict people during the school year, cap late fees to $10, so on and so on and so on. So that was passed by voters. And now the Tacoma City Council, which is pretty progressive, by the way, has come back and said, we have to change some of these things because it's simply not working. And it's leading to an environment where we're going to lose all these landlords. And then we're going to be in a really, really difficult situation when it comes to our housing crisis. So one of the people who was speaking at council meetings and trying to make his frustrations on this issue known is Mike Sanderson. He is with Sanco Properties, family-owned property manager in Tacoma. And he's been there for decades doing this kind of work, and it has become increasingly difficult for him to be able to do it. And so he's satisfied with these, or he's, you know, happy that the city of Tacoma is pursuing some changes, but says it doesn't nearly go far enough. Mike, welcome to Undivided.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here, Brady.
Yeah, so tell me about Sanco Properties.
Sanco Properties, we're a property management company here in Tacoma. I've been here over 30 years. So my father and I started about 30 years ago or so with our, started buying our own properties and whatnot. Now we manage some other people's, other investors along with our own.
Gotcha. So in the grand scheme of things, are you a little guy, medium guy, big guy?
Oh, little.
Little. Gotcha. Like how many units would you say you manage overall?
About 240 or so.
Gotcha. So over 30 years, how would you characterize the landscape for being a housing provider in Tacoma?
It just gets increasingly worse.
Okay.
It's harder and harder to do business. You know, you just shrug your shoulders and wonder why anybody keeps doing it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that is going to be the question I have for you towards the end of this interview, but I won't ask it of you just yet. So the protections for tenants that were passed by voters a couple years ago, what have been the most challenging aspects of that for you?
Well, the stuff they put in place really leaned everything so heavy favored towards the tenant, and it was towards the tenants, the tenant that would abuse the system, not towards the tenant that needed help or you know would do that. And what it does for the landlords is that it ties our hands. You know, we can't, you know, we can't, it's hard to help the tenants that actually need help and whatnot. What they passed, you know, a couple years ago, it was a $10 late fee on rent. Okay. $10 when our rents are $1,500 to $2,500. I mean, $10, you're going to tell people, if you don't pay your rent on time, I'm going to charge you $10. They're going to go, yeah, okay.
Right.
You know what, you know, and then the eviction bans, you know, during the school year and the winter time and, you know, and all that stuff without the systems in place to be able to handle the onslaught that comes in June when all those evictions can happen, You know, by the time all the evictions and all the court dates and everything were happening, the sheriff, which the system is set up to, the sheriff's the only one that could serve the notices. They're so backlogged. Some of these people never got their evictions.
Wow.
The rules have been set up in the tenant's favor pretty substantially anyway. And when each little municipality takes it upon themselves to think that they know, they put in these other little tiny things, it just creates a nightmare for us in the business.
So I guess in some little, you know, bit of good news, maybe it seems like the city is starting to understand that maybe there were some unintended consequences or the law went too far. So what are the changes that they're exploring right now?
Well, they did change the, got rid of the $10 late fee cap.
Okay.
And went with 1.5%.
Okay.
Which is at least something. That was, you know, that was encouraging. They changed it back to a one single 180-day notice for rent increase. So to renew a lease of a current resident, we can send out a lease renewal 180 days ahead of time, you know, whatnot, where the new law, new rule that they put in place had said that we needed two notices, mm-hmm. you know, which was against what the state had and what most everybody else had had. So, and they shortened up the winter eviction, the winter ban eviction by a few days on either end too. Still not quite as short as what Seattle's is, but at least shortened up a little bit. They did a few little things like that. So it was good that they at least addressed it and brought a few things back into line. So that was encouraging rather than just letting it hang out there. You have to understand that they weren't enforcing this either. Mm-hmm. 'Cause they looked at it as this was the measure that passed.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't enforce it. They said, we're not going to enforce it. This is going to be a judicial thing.
Got you.
Us as housing providers, we had to do stuff that was per city of Tacoma and then per measure one also. So I don't know if some of these adjustments and everything they were trying to do just, you know, as a matter of course, just to kind of protect their own stuff, you know, which I wasn't going to ask because I was just glad they were at least addressing something.
Yeah.
So
are those changes immediate?
As of January 1st, my understanding is, yes.
Yeah. Does that, you said at the beginning, things just keep getting worse and worse. Does that give you hope that maybe they'll start getting better, or are things just really still not workable?
Everything just keeps going the wrong way. And I'm not quite understanding how we're ever going to get back to the, you know, to the middle. My father always used to use the pendulum, you know what I mean? We could never seem to swing it in the middle there somewhere. And until, you know, the general public doesn't want to take us, look at us as the enemy, then I don't know how that's ever going to change, Brandy. I just don't understand that. So
yeah, and of course, not just Tacoma. You know, it's not like you can just say, "Oh, I'm going to do this, do it somewhere else." Like, we got statewide rent control, so there's not really a lot of escape paths for you. Is there a point where you just decide this isn't the business for you anymore?
You know, I don't know. Some of our owners have done that.
Yeah.
You know, quite definitely. A lot of our owners are just saying, you know, enough's enough and getting out. Some of them have moved, taken their money and moved to different states and whatnot. And, you know, I've been selling a few a year, you know, here and there. And, you know, eventually I'll kind of keep whittling down. But there's not people getting into my industry, that's for sure. So I don't know what that means for, you know, the next generations to come.
Yeah. And when you say you sell a few every year, like, they're just going to somebody who's going to live in it, right? Not, it's not a rental unit.
Right. Well, that's what happens is that when a single family house that I've rented for 20 years, you know, when it gets sold, it gets sold. Typically the last ones I've sold over the last 10 years, they get sold to a guy that fixes them up, a flipper. Then they're resold again in, you know, 90, 120 days to the end user, to a homeowner for $450,000, $500,000. It won't get back into the rental pool, the rental market for 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's none of that seems, I don't see that's helping our homeless population, our low-income people, nothing like that. So that's what I mean is that, you know, if you keep frustrating, you know, my clients, the people that I represent as far as our owners and whatnot, and myself, and we get frustrated and sell and do that, well, then there's going to be less of those homes out there. And the thing is, we all have business license with City of Tacoma. They know who we are. You know, we could be invited to the table. You know, there's a lot more of us out there than there are these big corporations that everybody thinks they are that own, you know, just multiple apartment buildings and everything. You know, what they're doing now is not helping the crisis. Not that I could see.
Yeah, it's making the crisis much worse. And I think that's the key. If Democrats really actually care about the housing crisis, they say this is the cause of our homelessness situation, which is costing us billions of dollars a year as a state, then they would immediately cease doing these kinds of things. And that's not to say you can't have some reasonable guidelines for landlords. You know, are there crappy landlords out there? Of course there are. I think every single one of us has had a crappy, mean, curmudgeon-y landlord who wasn't fair. But that is the exception, not the rule. And you are entering into an agreement with someone to pay rent to live somewhere. You should honor that agreement. And the government shouldn't give you a long, long list of ways that you can live somewhere for free and screw someone else over. Because that person is just going to say, okay, I'm not doing this anymore. And if they just say, I'm not doing this anymore, then that's one unit that's out of the rental market. And that puts people that you say you're trying to protect in a much more difficult situation. It makes no sense, as with so many things that make no sense in Olympia. It might make you feel good and, you know, the unions or whoever it is who control you, it makes them feel good because their friends and allies can screw over landlords and live there for 8 months or 2 years without paying any rent and get away with it entirely and just leech off the system. But it is not going to make the housing crisis any better. So this is going to continue to be a theme this legislative session. Are they going to make the housing crisis worse by continuing with these burdensome restrictions, or are they going to have a wake-up call like the city of Tacoma seems to be having? One can only hope. All right, coming up next, this is a wild story. I think it's very relevant to really blue states across the country that have significant far-left militant footprints, like Washington, like Oregon, like California, like New York, the FBI announcing this massive bust that they say thwarted potential bombing attacks from a pro-Palestine group. So we'll discuss that in detail coming up next. First, if you're thinking about getting a new roof, or even right now, I think there's still time to get some custom holiday lights from our friends at Valentine Roofing. So that's something that you could still do before Christmas if you choose to have them come and install it. It's a very popular service this time of year. They also do gutter cleaning, insulation, attic installation, even exterior cleaning. Or I know that a lot of you are probably thinking about the weather. We've had some pretty extreme weather, continue to have extreme weather. Maybe you've noticed some leaks in your roof. Well, you don't want to wait to have those checked out, because Valentine can come over, do a roof assessment. If there are leaks, they can see if they can repair those leaks, and they're happy to do that. They're not going to pressure you into getting a new roof, but it might be a situation where it is just time and your roof has reached the natural end of its life. And so Valentine can get you on their schedule to replace your roof. They even have flexible financing options, including zero down, 0% interest. So taking care of your home has never been easier with our friends at Valentine. In fact, they're coming out to my house on Friday to do the long overdue work of cleaning out our gutters. Last thing I want is my husband on a tall, tall ladder. Just sounds like a bad idea. Call 206 Roofing to schedule your free estimate today. 206 Roofing, the company's mission to serve and care for our neighbors with the purpose of creating a long-lasting impact and peace of mind. All right, in some national news, this is a wild story. So the FBI and the Department of Justice announcing that they've arrested four individuals for an alleged anti-capitalist, anti-government plot to bomb U.S. companies on New Year's Eve. There's some video put out by the FBI of their surveillance on these individuals before they swooped in to make the arrest. And they were like out in the Mojave Desert, and they were going to practice igniting, I guess, the bombs that they had intended to place in areas around Los Angeles on New Year's Eve. The FBI is calling this the disruption of a credible terrorist threat. And they say the four people who were initially arrested were members of a radical pro-Palestinian extremist group called the Turtle Island Liberation Front. And just so you understand, so Turtle Island is like a Native American name for North America. And apparently there was like a creation story from Native Americans where this land was formed on the back of a giant turtle. So they call themselves the Turtle Island Liberation Front. But they're very, very dangerous. They had taken concrete steps to build explosives, again, out in the Mojave Desert, practicing what they were going to do. The FBI had them monitored with a very, very high drone. They were allegedly planning a coordinated bombing attack on New Year's Eve using improvised explosive devices, targeting five separate locations around Los Angeles. And the FBI says these four individuals were motivated by pro-Palestinian, anti-law enforcement, and anti-government ideology. Here is the FBI on what they found while serving some of these search warrants.
I'll highlight some of the items found during those searches over the weekend. For example, in Carroll's residence, law enforcement found multiple posters and materials associated with Turtle Island Liberation Front, including posters stating, quote, "Death to America, long live Turtle Island and Palestine," and quote, "Death to ICE, Turtle Island Liberation Front." In Page's residence, law enforcement found a copy of the detailed bomb attack plan. This case is another reminder about the dangers that radicalized Antifa-like groups pose to people, public safety, and the rule of law.
These are the people who are out rioting and assaulting journalists and conservatives and ICE agents. These are the people, when we say Antifa, that we're talking about. These aren't radical Muslims. These are Americans meeting in the desert to plot New Year's Eve bombings against targets they ideologically disagree with. Left-wing terrorism is the predominant threat to America. This is an insane situation, and there's a fifth arrest, and Andy Ngo pointed out some interesting details of this. He says, I can exclusively report that the fifth unnamed arrested suspect in the Turtle Island Liberation Front New Year's Eve mass bombing terror plot is Trantifa militant Micah James Lignon. Lignon is on a federal hold in Lafayette, Louisiana. He's a trans activist and identifies as a female. His social media is filled with posts calling for the murder of people he labels as fascists. Doesn't that sound an awful lot like language from the mainstream Democratic Party? Calling everyone fascist and all the other language from the river to the sea. ICE agents are fascist. Trump is a fascist. Yay, Palestine. Israel bad. The language that they're engaged in, the types of propaganda found in their possession are almost indistinguishable from the type of stuff we saw people, the type of posters we saw people carrying at the No Kings rally. Almost indistinguishable. Threats of violence against ICE, threats of violence against President Trump, President Trump's head cut off in the guillotine, ICE agents, you know, talking about with a thing of ICE lit on fire, the kinds of death threats that we heard people spew outside the ICE facility in Portland, the people who were trying to blind me with wasp killer. And everyone wants to act like, oh, it's no big deal. It's people just exercising their opinions. No, they are, many of them, one inch from terrorism. And also, I've said this before about these groups of people. They are easily influenced. They're very easily influenced. Some of them are very intelligent, highly dangerous. But there's a lot of low IQ people in these crowds. I think I've characterized this on the show, but also in social media posts before. A big chunk of these individuals who engage in this kind of conduct are loners. They're outcasts. They're looking for somewhere to belong, something to do. I mean, hell, handful of the people outside the ICE facility day in and day out in Portland were just homeless, you know, younger people addicted to drugs. Easily influenced mob mentality. I bet 90% of those people could be convinced to go out and test bombs in the desert and be part of a plot like this. And that's why it's so critical to take these Antifa terror cells down, and that's what they are. And for there to be real consequences for their actions. And I also do think that it is important to point out that an awful lot of them think they're transgender. The percentage is is so disproportionate to the percentage of transgender people as part of the U.S. population. You go out to any sort of these protests, riots against ICE, whatever it is, whatever left-wing cause of the day, the number of people who are and identify as transgender is insane. There is seriously something going on there. And we call them Trantifa. Antifa, Trantifa. It is absolutely something the mainstream media will never talk about. FBI Director Kash Patel putting out a statement saying the charges made today show the FBI and our partners disrupted a dangerous New Year's Eve plot to simultaneously target two U.S. companies with multiple explosive devices. The defendants allegedly required materials to construct the devices, planned to test them in the Mojave Desert, and used encrypted communications in an attempt to evade detection. But thanks to the FBI and our partners, those efforts failed. The FBI is committed to keeping our homeland safe and making sure those who attempt violent acts face justice. And so, you know, every time we talk about and point out the dangerous nature of, like, the people who took over the Quad at the University of Washington in the name of Palestine, or the people who, you know, are outside ICE facilities day in and day out, there's a reason why we harp on it and want our elected leaders to take it seriously, is because these people have a terrorist mentality. Absolutely. And they also mention in here, excuse me, anti-law enforcement animus. So it's like, you know, you go back to the BLM, the Summer of Love, and all of those things. Anti-law enforcement animus fuels so much of what they do as well. So that's one terror plot thwarted from the radical left. Are there more terror plots planned? Let's hope the FBI is looking into it. Can you cue my mic so I can just... Thank you. All right. So the federal government and the Department of Education under Trump is making some changes when it comes to mental health funding in schools. But I have to say, I'm still very worried about the amount of money that the federal government is investing in mental health counselors. So you might recall, this article is back from April from The Hill, Trump administration cutting $1 billion in school mental health funding over DEI. So it says the Department of Education will not renew $1 billion in mental health funding for schools, citing concerns about diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts in the contracts. The funding came from a bipartisan gun violence bill signed by former President Biden that gave schools the money to hire mental health workers and counselors for students. Sorry, I have to keep clearing my throat. I got a little tickle in my throat. So at the time, that made sense, right? You have all this mental health money, $1 billion going to schools, and they're awarding that based on DEI and things that really have nothing to do with whether someone's qualified to be a mental health counselor, whether someone should be receiving mental health help in schools in an education setting. So I agree with it, but I think we have a larger problem here with the amount of money being spent on schools for mental health counselors that, frankly, at this stage, I don't think should exist. And I'll talk about my rationale, but the U.S. Department of Education announced that it is now turning around. And now that, you know, they've gotten rid of the DEI aspect of it, it's taking that money that was withheld and it is pushing it back out, doing $208 million in mental health grants. So it says today, the U.S. Department of Education announced over $208 million in new grant awards for the Mental Health Service Professional Demonstration and school-based mental health programs. New awards are going to a total of 65 recipients and will increase the number of credentialed school-based mental health service providers delivering mental health services to students in high-need local educational agencies. Says the Trump administration policy seek to encourage merit-based personnel hiring and evidence-based student services. To that end, published grant priorities for mental health programs include increasing the number of credentialed school psychologists and building necessary capacity and local support to ensure the provision of intensive mental health services beyond the life of the grant. I think that's a mistake. I think it's a mistake. Think about that. And please feel free to disagree with me. I would love to hear your rationale. I don't think we should have psychologists in schools. I don't think we should have psychologists in schools in states like Washington, where we know that so many of those school counselors are using protections that Democrats put in place under state law to push a radical ideology on children. We've got mental health counselors that we have documented trying to encourage kids to trans, hide secrets from their parents, Democrats pushing so that school staff and counselors can hide secrets from parents. I think this is well-intended, but in a state like Washington, the good intentions are used to indoctrinate children. And I think if you're a kid at this point and you're having mental health problems, I think it is absolutely up to your parent to help get you mental health services. And I get it that we all had sort of school counselors that you could sit and you could talk to your, and I had a wonderful school counselor. I still remember her name. It was Kathy. She was also my speech and debate coach, Kathy Martin. And, you know, I had issues at home growing up, and I'd, you know, sit and talk to her about those issues. And I'm not saying there's no place for that, for a kid to be able to share, you know, concerns or things that are going on at home or whatever it is. But it's just turned into an uncontrollable situation. I don't know what the answer to that is. I hope that the Department of Justice, as it puts these grants out, are awarding the grants to schools that they believe won't abuse those positions, and that those positions will go to people who aren't going to turn around and abuse them to indoctrinate kids or to convince kids that they're transgender or whatever it is. But in a state like Washington, I don't think we could protect against that. I do not believe that we could protect against a school psychologist messing with a kid's brain, because we just see too many examples of it. And when it says that they want to ensure that the provision of intensive mental health services can last beyond the life of the grant, should we have intensive mental health services in schools? I don't think so. I think that's something for a family to do with their kid, with an outside therapist, with a doctor outside the school setting. It's just further isolating kids from parents, and it worries me quite a bit. Again, I would love to hear your opinion on whether I've just am too jaded on this issue, but we have just seen too many times these teachers take advantage, and these psychologists take advantage of their easy access to children. All right, I want to get to our daily subscriber show poll, and then we'll get to comments. So yesterday on the show, we talked about how President Trump had this horrible post on Rob Reiner and his murder and his wife's murder at the hands, allegedly, of their son. I'm not going to read his full post again, but he basically said that they were murdered reportedly due to the anger he caused others through his massive, unyielding, incurable affliction and mild crippling disease known as Trump derangement syndrome. So essentially suggesting that this couple was brutally murdered by their son because Rob Reiner had TDS. Totally inappropriate. And I know President Trump doesn't apologize for things he says or posts, but I really thought, given the widespread backlash from even, you know, very, very loyal supporters of the president, that he would change his mind. And I have I'm going to play what he said in our closing sanity check today. But I wanted to ask you guys if you think that this went too far. I know a lot of you support the president. Do you want President Trump to apologize for his statement about Rob Reiner? Nicole, what do you think?
I don't know that an apology is possible at this point, or would go very far at this point.
Like, it would just fall off. It would seem insincere.
I just feel like he should not have mentioned it to begin with. And
yeah,
at this point, just don't respond. To just say, I'm good. Like, sorry, well, that was sorry it was taken out of
it wasn't out of context.
Not out of context. Taken poorly.
I think if it's brought up again, then yes, he should apologize. I don't think it's too late in the sense that if someone else brings it up. Now, I think you're right, mm-hmm. that if he proactively said something about, I shouldn't have said that, it would seem insincere.
Right.
But if it's brought up again and he just says, you know, upon reflection and the response I've gotten, I shouldn't have said it. Yeah. I that would be fine with me. But 75% of you are saying, yes, you want an apology from President Trump about it. Because, I mean, you know, think of how all the reactions to Charlie Kirk's murder, and Rob Reiner actually had a really nice one, and, you know, are disgusted with so many of those reactions. And so to have a reaction like that from the president is
disgusting. I will say I it's hard for me to compare those two. I'm not excusing anything that Trump does in this case, especially. But Rob and Charlie, I don't think had any sort of.
Well, one was a political assassination. One was.
No. I just mean the two of them didn't have a relationship, and they didn't go back and forth, and they didn't, you know, talk terrible about each other. Right. And so him saying, I'm sorry, that person that I have no connection to was murdered. Like, fine. But Rob and Trump have gone back and forth for years, and Rob has said terrible, horrible things about him. So I think that's a different thing. So it's hard for me to compare those two things, but I'm still not excusing what he said.
Yeah.
He should have kept his mouth closed.
Yeah, Stephen Larson, he's an American. He has First Amendment rights. If that's how he feels, that's how he feels. Yeah, but he's also the president, you know. Hey, dog, I said no, but I'm pretty split. I'm hoping the backlash will convince him to do better next time. Dennis, Rob mentioned many times he hoped he would wake up to see Trump's obituary, and he didn't talk real nice after Trump had the attempted assassination, but in the end, it wasn't right what he said, but Trump didn't get the last laugh. Let's see here. CW, I would like to hear him apologize, but it's not in his character. Bill O'Reilly, in his book, The United States of Trump, states that Trump has historically indicated that he does not see a need to apologize if he believes his actions were ultimately right or defensible, such as his 2016 characterization of certain remarks as locker room talk, rather than an admission of fundamental wrongdoing. I think it's just frustrating for me, though, as someone who has recently come out in favor of Donald Trump, because it's sort of like, man, you're doing so many good things, so don't have these dumb distractions that allow people to very easily paint you as a bad person, because it's a distraction from all these things that you're doing that are really, 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 really great.
Yes, nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. And I don't think any of us are pretending that the president is perfect, but it really would be nice for him. It's just a very obvious, like,
it's an annoying distraction.
You shouldn't have said it. Absolutely not. All right. We'll get to comments coming up next. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark challenge. Maybe the next 2 weeks, you've got some time off from work and you want to schedule some time with First Mark. I think it's a perfect opportunity. It takes about a half hour to an hour to actually speak with First Mark, talk about your insurance needs, go over your current insurance, and then they take it from there. They go out, they shop their market of carriers. They try to find you the best insurance at the best price and make sure you're not paying for something that you don't need. And then they come back with their recommendations. And sometimes they might give you a pat on the back, virtual pat on the back, and say, you know what? The insurance you have right now is great. We can't find you anything better. And they'll send you on your way and you can give yourself a pat on the back. Or they'll say, like they did for so many Undivided viewers and listeners, we can save you money. We can even get you better insurance. Christine's saving $10,000 a year just by taking those first steps to do the First Mark challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right, let's get to some comments from the live show on the man from Sierra Leone who stabbed a Bellevue officer. Big Princess, the big difference is that to the left, being in the U.S. illegally is not a crime. Illegals then have to break the law again before the left would even recognize criminal activity. And then once they're here, they don't like, to them, it doesn't matter if someone's here illegally from a different country, wherever it is, you committed a crime, you know, you'd face the same consequences as an American. And I just think that's so stupid, because if you can get a violent criminal out of our country, why would you not do it? Like, we can't, because of the Constitution, ship an American overseas, although sometimes we would love to. But if you can't say, hey, this crazy guy who's homeless, leeching off our system and lured Bellevue cops to the transit center so he could stab them and try to murder them, if we can get him out of the country, we should probably send him back to Sierra Leone. But no, they won't do that. Matthew Cook, lying by omission, which is what the media is engaged in by not telling us this man's from Sierra Leone. It's lying by omission. Local media will only call out race when it's a white person. By doing so, it leads to speculation of race by people who pay attention. Oh, 100%. They'll describe, oh, the suspect was a white man, you'll know instantly. But if it was a black man, they'll just say, oh, suspect is a man. If you're 5'9", whatever it is, they won't make it about race. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Dan Blatt, the leftist news network support illegal immigrants. Media is just another arm of the Democratic machine here in Washington State. Totally agree. Oh, on the new King County executive eliminating the equity, race, and social justice offices. Let's see. Son Miller says, so he just took the doors off of the offices? So he's saying he's going to make it like one.
Right.
No, because they're not. Some of those people are losing their jobs, so he can coalesce it. I just believe, I mean, does that make sense? That if you've got your job, you're the head of the Office of Equity. Like, you are going to say, I need to justify this Office of Equity stay.
Yep.
And so I don't think you're going to see, and I could be wrong, I've been wrong about many a thing before. I just believe it's a good start. Maybe it's the step toward just getting rid of it all entirely.
I mean, I like that he's decreasing the number of employees. So smaller government, maybe?
Right.
I like that idea.
Yes.
I know he's trying to employ them other places, but maybe those are other places that have openings or whatever it is. And I don't know. I like
it. Less layers of bureaucracy is always going to be better.
Absolutely.
Let's see here. Little Miss J. So many of these equity groups have gone underground. This is the move we have heard from leaders in the DEI groups. So that's a question, too. Are you just trying to eliminate, like, literally the plaque on the door that says DEI to avoid sort of backlash from the federal government? I'm open to that happening. Mm-hmm. I just like the shrinking of the bureaucracy.
Yeah, I'm sure it's still somebody's going to be monitoring it. I'm sure. But
yeah.
As long as the whole department is not a thing.
Right.
20 people, unnecessary.
100%. On Tacoma adjusting tenant rights laws, Guys Keir said, I would rather invest in tulip bulb futures than be a landlord. maybe, I don't know, are tulip bulb futures a successful investment?
I don't know.
Tanya Butterton, it means corporate landlords. That's what it means. Yeah, and they say they hate these big bad landlords who have all the big high... Okay, they're the only ones who can survive the nonsense that you're doing. You think the little guy can survive that? Of course not. So right. Everything you say you want to accomplish, you undermine by what you do. It makes no sense. Unless that's the goal all along. On the Fed's disrupting this left-wing terror plot, uncloudy, the woke mind virus is deadly. 100%.
Did you see two of those people were trans? Two of them are trans. Like the guy that the fifth guy and then the, another one of the suspects.
Take up the take the picture of the four suspects. You tell me which one is trans. There's a potential for, I think I know. I'll guess.
Well, wait, it's in a, hold on.
You don't know the picture of the, I'm going to guess which one is the trans.
I think I know.
Is it the guy with the bug eyes? can you find it?
Where the heck
is sorry. That? The four, the picture of the four suspects.
Yeah.
I bet it's the bug eye one.
Fifth one. It's Zachary Aaron Page
is one of the trans ones. Okay.
So I think it is the bug eye guy. I mean, if it's in order, that's who it is.
Gotcha. Okay. See? The disproportionate. Always.
And this is scary because that fifth person, it used to be a Marine.
Yeah. That person, it was an ex-Marine and a former
and a cop.
And the transgender one in the middle. Yeah.
Fascist. Now they're all fascists.
Yep. That's pretty terrifying. I'm very curious what agency hired him to be a police officer. Yeah. And he was a Marine. That is horrifying. Greg, the only fascists I see nowadays are the Democrat Party. They do exactly what they blame the right for. Anyone with half a brain cell can see that. On the Fed shifting money from DEI into non-DEI based mental health in schools, HXOM, parents should be taking care of their children's mental health issues. I tend to agree. Todd Welch, the counseling should be tied to a required reports communication with parents. Okay, yes, if you're going to say, and that's kind of what the Parental Bill of Rights is seeking to do, if my child is seeing a therapist at school, then I get to know what they're talking about. Totally different situation. But in our state right now, that's a secret. And that's what the Parental Bill of Rights initiative is trying to undo. So that's a really good point, Todd. I'm fine with the therapy aspect of it. Mm-hmm. In cooperation and consultation and full disclosure with parents. Is that really so hard? I don't think so.
I think it's growing here too. I mean, we've been noticing all of these health care centers that are being put in schools that are sponsored by medical institutions and things like that. And I think those are sliding in under the radar. So 100%. Pay attention because, I didn't realize that, what was it? Lake Sammamish High School... Our Lake Sammamish School District and Evergreen Health Centers are partners.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they're just eliminating a step for a parent to be involved. Because if your kid wants to go to the doctor, they got to talk to you like, hey, I need to go to the doctor. But now I can go to the doctor at school. I can get mental health at school. I can get sexual reproductive health at school. And that's the goal. Cut the parents out entirely. This is a great comment we got on Patreon. James Bambury. Brandy and Nicole, thank you for a fantastic show. I'm an immigrant from England who did it legally. The only thing more maddening than spending thousands of dollars to become a citizen, only to be shown by WASTATE that it doesn't matter if you want to check the party in power. It's the glossing of people who flout immigration laws by not being held accountable and who vote when they should not. Thank you. My wife takes a bus from the transit center to and from work 2 days a week. Oh, God.
Ugh,
that's terrifying. But as you said, I mean, people paid so much money, waited so much time to come to the U.S. legally, and then they realize that leaders here don't even care if they're legal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Sorry, I have this like tickle deep in my throat. And once it's there, it's never going away. Uh-uh.
So close.
But that's okay. So close. All right. We're going to get to thank you, Nicole.
Yeah.
Speaking of President Donald Trump, he was asked about the Rob Reiner comments. We'll play that in our closing. Sanity check.
First we have first mark. Oh, wait.
No, we don't.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Nicole.
Sorry.
So President Trump was given an opportunity to back away or apologize or clarify his remarks on the murder of Rob Reiner. Instead, he did this.
A number of Republicans have denounced your statement on Truth Social after the murder of Rob Reiner. Do you stand by that post?
Well, I wasn't a fan of his at all. He was a deranged person as far as Trump is concerned. He said he knew it was false. In fact, it's the exact opposite, that I was a friend of Russia, controlled by Russia. You know, it was the Russia hoax. He was one of the people behind it. I think he hurt himself in career-wise. He became like a deranged person, Trump derangement syndrome. So I was not a fan of Rob Reiner at all in any way, shape, or form. I thought he was very bad for our country.
And that is the end of the answer. And then he moved on to a different reporter. So he could have said all that and still said, but he shouldn't have been stabbed to death by his own son. So just, Trump, why you got to do this? You know, just focus on the good policies, fixing the country, and just yip, a little less, okay? A little less tip typing would be good for everyone's sanity, including yours, I think. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We certainly do appreciate it. A reminder, we'll have a regular week of shows this week, so see you on the live show again tomorrow. But we will be off the final 2 weeks of the year. It's not even two full weeks. Well, yes, it is. The next 2 weeks, we'll be off the live show. We have a ton of great content. We are not missing episodes of Sundays with subscribers. So we have already gearing up some really good episodes of that. So just letting you know so you can, you know, come to terms with it early on and not, you know, cry in your cereal bowl next week. If you'd like to become a subscriber, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Okay, that's it. See you tomorrow.